This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, my name is Sue and you are listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs program. Co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Kathy and Leanne. Hello, ladies.
Good evening.
Good evening, Sue.
Do you feel the estrogen again?
Absolutely. What a treat. Well, this new show.
Femme power in this room. It's fantastic.
It isn't. And we've got Lisa joining us. Lisa's also training up on panel tonight. So there's actually four loads of estrogen going around the studio.
Mm, she's like a silent partner.
And four hands on the panel.
There you go. Last week we were talking about breasts. This week talking about hands. What's going on? This isn't supposed to be a family current affairs program.
Oh, it sounds very appropriate for the hour that we've got lined up.
We have, because later on this hour we're going to be talking homophobic crime with Gabby and Jill. Now, they're from the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer Service. I know they've got a title which I'll bring in later. Now, they're going to be answering your questions about homophobic crime. If you do have questions that you want them to answer or that you want them to look at, whether it's happened in the past or whether it's happening to you now, you can call, email, or you can text.
You can call us 9699 2949, send us a text 0427 JOY 949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
Now, remember, we will keep your anonymity. That's a very big word for this time of the year.
And not only that, we won't say your name.
That too. That too.
All right, we're now heading into the current affairs chat time. A big story today is that the federal government has announced a Senate inquiry into same-sex marriage. Now, this follows a private member's bill which was introduced last week by Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young, who was, people may remember her for being ejected from the parliament because she had her two-year-old child in there. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh, I do remember.
Right. Yeah. She's the Greens spokesperson on GLBTI issues, among other things, so she's doing a lot of good work for us. So big news that so her private members bill basically would like to extend the rights to marriage and recognition of unions to same-sex couples. So our listeners may remember that the Howard government changed the Marriage Act several years ago to specifically make it between a man and a woman, which legally makes it impossible for us to marry. And the now we've spawned a whole bunch of relationship registers. Victoria has one. I don't know how many people have sort of signed up to do that. It's a local council type thing, which is probably a bit less
and
than births, ideal.
And deaths and marriages, isn't it? But it's still, yeah, it's still not
the registry. I don't think it was welcomed as well as it could have been. I think people sort of they kind of thought of it like a pet registry.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty much the basic line of a lot of people thinking. Well, why can't we go to a church, or why can't I even have a celebrant and say the words I do, and have that. The ACT tried to introduce a civil union scheme which had a ceremonial component, and the federal government knocked that down. Which of course they have the power to do because the ACT is a territory as opposed to a state. So it's actually quite timely, this inquiry, because the Equal Love Group is organising a national day of action. And that's happening on the 1st of August. What they're trying to do is they're having mass rallies in Sydney. There'll be one in Melbourne at Federation Square. And they're going to try and get the they do this every year, but it's quite timely now. This is all sort of happening as the US starts to introduce same-sex marriage in several
more
states
and more
as well.
More states, yeah. It was DC, I think, this week, wasn't it? Washington, mm-hmm. DC.
Well, there's interesting news out of the US as well. I think the state is suing the federal government over their laws because the state recognises legal same-sex marriage, but they're suing them for the money that it's going to cost to, I think, it's the money that it's going to cost for benefits or some such.
Oh, only in America would they be having litigation over this. But thank goodness for the Greens doing something for us. So
And they are doing a great job. They're often seen as the kind of little people in the, you know, in the nowhere land doing nothing. But actually, they are fighting for the rights of communities such as ours. And they're doing a great job. I know that the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby are also forming a submission in as well with the Equal Love.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with this inquiry. I think they are asking for submissions to the inquiry. So really, it's up to the community. And in instances like this, if we don't say that we want it, even if you, like, there's a lot of discontent in the community, I think, about people who actually want marriage or some who just want a civil union. Regardless, it's a good idea to actually, you know, make a submission, get involved, and make your voice heard.
Be heard, exactly.
So can we write in? I mean, how do we go about and do it? Can we write into our MPs? If they're asking for submissions and information, can we actually have a voice?
Oh, we can check that out.
Well, I think so. Probably the best place, I don't know that I have the website at hand, is the Equal Love website. And you can probably Google that and come up with it. I think it's equallove.org.au or something like that.
They've created 5 web-based ads, and they're going to release them on YouTube so you can actually see what they're doing, which is a fantastic way of getting promotion out there.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. It's got I've seen one or two of them. They're quite well done.
It's probably a pretty cost-effective way of doing it too, rather than doing newspaper or, you know,
other
media. So
I'm more likely to get on YouTube and have a look rather than get into the Herald Sun.
Business. Yeah.
Everybody knows my opinion of that.
Just read that for the sport? I don't think so.
No.
All right, moving on. The next item we've got is a little bit more lighthearted, I guess, if you take this point of view. Scientists in Newcastle in England have created human sperm.
What?
Yeah, they have created human sperm.
How can you create human sperm without actually doing the deed?
Well, I don't know. I used to cook white sauce for my lasagna. Maybe that's how. It was just an experiment in the kitchen and it went wild.
Scientists have been to Leanne's place.
Welcome to the wonderful world of stem cells, everybody. This is how they've done it. They found the stem cells can produce sperm. So they've said that it is, could lead to new treatment for male infertility.
Right.
Which sounds like a ruse to me. I don't know. It sounds like a whole bunch of feminists in there, just going, right, let's create the plastic man so we don't actually need them anymore, make them a little redundant.
No more men for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I don't know. It's a bit disconcerting. I don't really like
it. And how do you buy it? Like, do you just go
you pop
to
down
the chemist and you go, I'll have a jar of the... I can't believe it's not sperm.
A whole lot of lesbians lining up.
That's right.
No, look, it is disconcerting. I don't know that it's appropriate to manufacture something as organic as sperm or eggs. I know there are people who are infertile and I know there's a need.
But I just worry about that. I mean, the genetic stuff, the DNA stuff, so complex. I don't know that we actually understand enough of it to know how it all works together, to know that we're not going to get sort of mutant...
Well, I think we would.
Well, they say that it is fully mature and functional. I don't know what it actually has to do to prove that it is fully mature.
Just wiggles
and
around in
functional. Yeah. You can jump through hoops or, answer 20 questions in less than 10 seconds. I don't understand quite how that works, but it is a little bit futuristic. I think it's probably a bit disconcerting for a lot of men out there.
I wonder whether it is a possibility for the future that this is where we're heading, that you could actually, instead of going to a sperm, well, you go to a sperm bank, but literally you go, I'll have, modification 2A, and you get that rather than a person, because there are such a limited number of sperm donors within Victoria and Australia. But I still don't see it as an option that I would personally like to take. I mean, I don't even like genetically modified food. I'm not likely to.
I don't like modified people.
Yes. Have you met my daughter? No. Please.
Gee, she looks like a test tube.
She does.
She has that glassy look in her eye.
It's just not. It's not right. I'll text in, actually, if you've got an opinion about it. Let us know what you think.
I guess it's a fertility issue too. I mean, I guess there are couples of whatever mix that want to have children, and for lots of reasons, not only being socially sterile, was that the word? The term that was used? All sorts of reasons.
But then, there's the whole idea of, where your history, where your family comes from, that kind of, that heritage that it would be lost if you've been created in that purely sterile manner as well.
It came from a packet.
Yes.
It's like those...
what
is it? You had the little fish thing. What were they called? And you... sea monkeys.
Yeah, you could be like a sea monkey.
Yeah, you get a little packet of sea monkey, get a packet of sperm.
Kathy's not looking...
No.
Because we're old.
Hey, I'm Generation X. Sea monkeys.
Didn't you have sea monkeys?
No. It sounded a little bit like the snack to me when you were just explaining it then, so...
Well, you don't eat them. They're like little pets.
Right.
I don't know what they are.
They're little tiny kind of shrimp things, basically. basically. Yeah. I can feel a Kris Kringle present
in the
coming
olden
up.
I'm sperm to the sea monkeys right now. Well, okay. Moving on in that vein. Still on families. In New South Wales, there's been a recommendation to allow same-sex couples to adopt, which is going to face a bit of a stoush in the state parliament. It's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, there was a story that came out that the Premier, Nathan Rees, was actually considering doing a deal with the Reverend Fred Nile, who's probably known nationwide as one of the foremost conservatives in the country and certainly has a bit of a stranglehold in the Legislative Council, which is in New South Wales. So this all raises interesting stuff about adoption in that same-sex couples, because adoption is a state-based issue, as is marriage at the moment, or those relationship registers. But lesbians and gay men are perfectly okay to be foster parents.
Yes.
But they cannot adopt children and be legal parents.
The question is, for too long. You have to give them back.
Because God knows we'll damage them. I mean, why? Why is it that we can do that? We can foster? You can actually even adopt, I think, as a single parent. If you are a gay or a lesbian, I think that's still on the board, that you can do that. I'm sure you'd have to prove yourself, you know, jumping the hoops like the sperm. But what is the reason then that as gay partners or gay parents that we're not seen as acceptable?
I think the age-old traditional family, you know, the nuclear family is still a very tough model to break. I mean, people still see it as the ideal. You know, a lot of the Rainbow Families group in Victoria has done a lot of work about trying to change that stereotype of, you know, you must have a mother, you must have a father. Whereas we know Rainbow Families, it's completely, you know, non-traditional, yet those children grow up to be perfectly normal and well-adjusted.
And even more so, don't you think, Leanne?
I think that when people actually make a very conscious decision to have children, it means that they want them. They've thought through all the implications and they've planned for it. Whereas I think there's a majority or a wider group that just have kids for the sake of having kids because that's what happens and haven't thought it through and don't necessarily make ideal parents. And of course, there's mix in everything and standards and everything. But I think when we have to stop and think about what we're doing, we're far more prepared for what we're taking on.
And so we really then look at what the kids need and do. Yeah, and I know my kids, I've got a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old, and they're very, I guess, acclimatised. They're very open to different people and different race, religion, sex, you know, gender. It doesn't really matter because they're so inclusive.
Mm.
And I know that there are heterosexual families with their children and they're like, oh, no, he's, you know, something or other, and you can see the difference because my kids just see it as natural and normal,
which is a good thing. You know, we've had a lot of stuff in particular Victoria lately about racism and the tax on Indian students and that type of thing. And the more people you have with, and the more children who grow up with broader minds, as opposed to this is a very narrow view of what family should be, what society should be, what my friends should look like. You know, the more people we have, more children breaking out of that mold, I think, is the better, and we show that with Rainbow Families.
Absolutely. We should actually contact Rainbow Families. We'll try and do that over the next week and get them to make some comment on this.
Maybe we should get the adoption agency in and ask them why they've got the policies.
We'll do that too. Actually, why not? We'll set forward an adoption show. We'll get that happening for everybody. That's a great idea.
Because, you know, that we can't, a lot of couples have to look overseas for adoptions, which they can't do because those countries like China, Korea and Vietnam have very strict policies against gay and lesbian families too. So because there's only less than 50 children nationally who are put up for adoption, you know, from birth, because a lot of people want the little baby as opposed to a, you know, slightly scarred 10-year-old, they are looking overseas, but they can't do it. They either have to lie and say they're a single parent or, you know.
You brought up two really interesting points, one being that we do see adoption as for babies, infants, which is really wrong, I know, because there are children out there wanting parents and there are parents wanting children.
Mm.
And the other thing is in China, and I know this is a stereotype, but it's a true one in one sense, is that there are women or babies, girls, being killed and abandoned because they are girls and there are people who want to adopt and people who are going to be great parents or are great parents now. And it's just incredibly sad that that's happening.
All right, and the last item we've got on the news is a sporty one. We haven't had really sporty stuff on the show before,
which is winter.
Quite cool.
It could be.
Look, the World Out Games are happening in Copenhagen from late July, and we've got a whole bevy of Melbourne athletes that are travelling over. I think there's going to be several thousand athletes that will be at the Games itself. Lots of teams from the Melbourne Argonauts, the Spikers, some marathon runners, some swimmers, a whole lot of people going for the Games, which will also have a rainbow conference, which will attract people and of like minds to talk about human rights, talk about the state of the GPLTI affairs in various countries. And also there'll be a big entertainment component for the Games, and we've got several local artists, including the Blow Waves, Yana Alana and Wes Snelling, going over to participate in what the program called Out Cities. And Melbourne's been one of nine cities from around the world that's been invited to showcase, I suppose. It's like an expo. So we get given... Copenhagen's a very square city with lots of big squares, like open squares, and so they've been given a square and a big area to basically
like a Rubik's
showcase.
Cube.
It's really cool. So they get, so there'll be performances, they'll have there'll be puppeteers, and there'll be, the athletes will be allowed to wander around, obviously, and they'll have displays, and so showcasing Melbourne as a queer city and why people who are coming, or not in Copenhagen, but who've attended the Games from all around the world should come and see Melbourne and hang out with us.
Fabulous. Because, I mean, the Melbourne Out Games were such a success. So let's build, it's great we're building on that.
They did such a fabulous job last January, the first Asia Pacific Out Games. They had 1,500 athletes here and they had 12 sports. It just went everything from dance sport to swimming to, to running, to the whole lot was fabulous. So good luck to everyone who's going over to Copenhagen.
You're listening to Hear Me Roar. We are here with Leanne and Kathy tonight, and in the studio we have some lovely guests. But before we introduce them, we did have a text in. We've had several texts in, but this is one we'd really like to bring up. I would like to know, if I was a female from a male to a female, could I get married to the male partner in a church? It's a great question, and we are going to try and follow that. We had a bit of a discussion here, but we sort of went round in circles. So we are definitely going to try and follow that one up.
Yeah, I think we had, just talking off air, I think whatever your legal gender is, I think that's probably a safe bet that you would, if you say, I think Tristan's saying that he was a male, I'm a bit confused. But anyway, if you were transitioning from male to female and your gender legally changed and you were considered a female in the eyes of the law, then I wouldn't see anything stopping you from marrying your partner.
And coming up, I think, in about a fortnight, we're going to cover transgender discrimination. So we're going to have Sally in from Transgender Victoria to discuss things like that. So Tristan will bring that up, and make sure you're listening to that show. Now, as a result of a working group between Victoria Police and the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, the first gay and lesbian liaison officer was introduced to the police in the year 2000. Since then, the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer program has expanded right across Victoria. The GLOWs, as they're known, have specialist training in GLBTI issues. They have a knowledge of GLBTI communities and are sensitive to the issues faced by us. Tonight in the studio we have Inspector Jill Wood, who's Safer Communities, and Senior Constable Gabrielle Tyack from Gay and Lesbian Liaison. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Hello.
Thank you.
Can you give us a brief history of the GLOWs and your involvement in the evolution of this process?
All right. I can start off. It was about in 1996. We decided that we would get the Gay and Lesbian Police Employees Network set up, and that was a result of a lot of discrimination that was being experienced by gay and lesbian police, particularly the men. And we decided we would set up the Gay and Lesbian Police Employees Network. And as a result of that, it was formed, and it had a really sort of checkered start, I suppose, in a way. There was a lot of discrimination against us. We had death threats, which was just amazing. I don't know what people felt so threatened about, but we did. We had death threats against our group. But we persisted, and I guess one of the highlights for us was the first time that a Chief Commissioner marched with us in uniform in the Pride March, and that was Christine Nixon, as you'd all remember. And that really, I guess, cemented the GLOWs and the gay and lesbian police as it was okay to be gay and lesbian in Victoria Police. So that was sensational. And then it went on from there, and Melinda Edwards was our first GLOW, and Mel's now a police officer in Northern Territory. Gabby, I guess, can sort of fill in from where we went then.
Well, we started off with one full-time gay and lesbian liaison officer, which was Melinda, and eventually we ended up getting a full-time GLOW in each region, and we have five regions in Victoria. Since then, over the years, we ended up getting quite a few GLOWs in stations around the state, and at this stage we have one full-time GLOW, which is myself, and 16 portfolio holders around the state, and their role is to do their general policing duties, and they have a portfolio as gay and lesbian liaison, so if anything, any homophobic crime came up, they would then deal with that and assist the investigation there.
How would they do that? What sort of assistance would they give?
We give advice to investigators. We assist the police in different kinds of scenarios and problems that gay and lesbian liaison, bisexual, transgender people might go through that heterosexual people might not. And an example of that would be the fear of outing themselves and coming and reporting crimes to police. So we really go out there and encourage the community to report crimes to us.
And that's, we're kind of doing that tonight because you're here to answer questions from the listener. So we would like you to listen. Sorry, to text in on 0427 Joy 949. You can call in on 96992949 or send us an email on air at joy.org.au if you do have a question for Jill or Gabby.
Oh, I was going to ask you, you mentioned before there was a bit of training involved. What sort of stuff do you need to know in order to, you know, to assist people who may come to you with all manner, and I'm assuming, you know, domestic violence, homophobia or, you know, that sort of attacks, that kind of thing? What sort of stuff do you have to be aware of, or what does the training involve?
Okay, well, since GLOW originated in 2000, we've actually had one course probably in 2003 on what it is to be a GLOW and all those sorts of issues. Since then, Scott Davis, who's the Sergeant of the Gay and Lesbian Advisory Unit, has been putting together a course for recruits at the Academy, and that's actually started last week. So all new recruits will be given a lecture on gay and lesbian liaison, what it's like to police all different types of communities, including GLBTI. We also go out to the constable's course. So once recruits leave the academy and become a police officer, they go back into the academy for training in their first year, and we give a lecture to them as well, so they get lots of training. And we're also putting together a gay and lesbian liaison officer course, updated from the one in 2003, so all GLOWs will go through that course.
Okay. I'm not asking you outright, don't get me wrong, but I know we talked about, you know, there's a gay and lesbian police officer organization, and Jill, you spoke about it before. Listeners may be curious to know, is it a prerequisite if you're a GLOW or to be involved in the program for you to be or to identify as gay, lesbian, you know, bisexual, transgender yourself?
No, absolutely not. Any police officer can be a GLOW. Really, it depends on the bosses of that station and that area, local area, to determine whether they think they need a GLOW at that station, and that would obviously be determined by whether there's any homophobic crimes reported, whether there's a gay community that they're aware of. So around the state there's only 16, and they would be in areas where there are homophobic and prejudice motivated crimes. So no, there's no prerequisite to be gay and lesbian to do the job.
And I think the important thing about doing the job is that you've got the right person for the job, regardless of how they identify, because you've got to have someone who's really, really good working with people, someone who's empathetic and really, really a great listener. That's the important thing, I think.
Can we start? Would you like to start with some questions? We've got some come through already.
Sure.
Now, this has come in from a female. Sometimes my partner hits me and I'm ashamed to go to the police. Gabby?
Okay, well, one thing I can say is that under no circumstances, no matter how you identify or who you are or who your partner is, you should never be hit or assaulted, and that's an offence. So there's no reason why you should feel ashamed of going to the police. All police treat everyone the same. Everyone's part of the community. So go into any police station. We need to have you report assaults, especially family violence, because studies have shown and across the world and in Victoria that if you're a victim of domestic violence or family violence, it is a cycle. It increases, it gets worse, and I think at least 50% of the homicides in Victoria are related to family violence. So yes, definitely report it.
And I think the important thing about that is that about 80% of domestic violence are not reported, we believe. So it's very important that people actually actually come to us and let us know, so we know how significant the actual offences are.
What about in the classification of same-sex partners? Does that make a difference when you're looking at this?
Well, no. The Crimes Family Violence Act was amended, I think it was late last year, to include same-sex partner included in what included in the definition of family violence. So although it's very recent, it shows that the government in Victoria is taking it very seriously, and partner includes same-sex partner.
What is an intervention order, and do you need to report a crime to get an intervention order?
Now, an intervention order is something that can be taken out to stop someone harassing, molesting, threatening. There's a whole lot of different categories, and that can be taken out from the court. But usually what happens is that when police attend an incident, a family violence incident, there's often assaults or something that you know happen as a result of that. So we will take action and charge the offender with those assaults, but we'll still assist the person to take out an intervention order.
It's interesting we're talking about domestic violence, and just sort of sticking on that for a moment, domestic abuse as a term, and I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on this, because abuse cannot just necessarily mean, you know, a backhander or someone being pushed or shoved or whatever. It can also be, you're nodding, so I'm on the right track here,
yeah.
But it's like financial abuse or emotional abuse. And now those kinds of things, or threats to pets and that type of thing, would probably be more relevant to our listeners. Is that type of thing something that's reportable to the police?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a really important thing for people to understand, is that it's not about the bruises to the face and the broken nose and the things like that people can see. It's very much about emotional abuse, psychological abuse, withholding money, yeah, like you said before, hurting pets, things like that. They're the things that a lot of people don't consider to be violence, but they are just as bad, if not worse, than actual physical violence.
On that note, I think we should remind our listeners to send in their questions or queries. Text us 0427-JOY-949, phone us 96992949, or send us an email if you're still at work or at home, onair@joy.org.au.
Now, this is the next one that's come in. This is, again, from a female, and she says, I recently broke up with a girl, but now she's stalking me. I often see her in her car outside my house. I have tried to get her to leave me alone, but she won't. Can I go to the GLOWS for help?
Absolutely, you can go to the GLOWS, but you can go to speak to any police officer at any police station and report this. It is an offence. Stalking is an offence. So although there are GLOWS, every police officer can deal with all situations involving GLBTI community. I just want to go back to that last question, because within the community and also outside the community, it's often considered same-sex family violence is not an offence, simply because people don't believe that a woman can hurt a woman or that a man can hurt a man. And that's totally wrong. It doesn't matter who you're with, who your partner is, what sex they are. Family violence and assaults and other, like, intimidation, emotional abuse, it's all an offence. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Just so, well, we're talking about stalking. It's one of those words that's kind of entered into our vernacular as a bit of a laugh, really, hasn't it? Oh, you know, are you stalking me, or, you know, I'm becoming a stalker or whatever.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between persistence, between someone who would like to really get to know you and perhaps text you a lot or, you know, Facebook you consistently, and stalking? Where do you draw the line, and how do you know if someone's actually, you know, broken the law?
I think when you look at stalking, it's something that is really starting to intimidate you, when you're starting to feel really threatened by it. So if someone's continually outside your house, or the texting is just becoming really persistent, as in all hours of the night, so that sort of thing, you know, and you feel it yourself, you're getting really, really apprehensive about that. It can take a variety of things with stalking, but it's basically once you start to feel threatened, that's when you really need to take action.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a course of conduct or a pattern of behaviour that causes you to fear, to feel fear. So that's what stalking is. It's not a one-off, someone's texting you, or maybe two times, but if it's a pattern of behaviour that really makes you feel intimidated or threatened or in fear.
Mm.
So that's the definition.
Okay, I think we'll just keep moving because there are so many, and we might just break for a song in a moment. But these are really important questions that we do need to answer. And if you have got one, text in on 0427 JOY 949, call us on 9699 2949, or give us an email on air at joy.org.au. Now, this is from a male listener. I don't always feel safe at home in some of the beats at Melbourne. What's being done to protect the guys like me who like beat sites?
Well, firstly, what we need beat users to do is report crimes to police, because I would say at least 90% of crimes, or even more higher, are not reported to us. So if we don't know what's going on, we can't assist you, we can't protect you, we can't add extra patrols to areas. I would like to know what this person is afraid of, whether there has been assaults, whether they've been assaulted. And that once we know that information, that's when we can actually act and assist and hopefully catch the perpetrator.
It's interesting. We just had an SMS come in from Anonymous, and he says, as a gay male, I feel a bit intimidated by cops in general. If something happens at a sex on premises venue, like your wallet gets stolen, will the police actually do something?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're certainly not going to discriminate against someone whether they're on premises, sex on premises, and they have their wallet stolen. I mean, that's a theft, and we'll take exactly the same action as we would if it was stolen from an office in the city. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any difference at all.
So in that case, then, that person would ring 000, is that right? And could they then ask for a GLOW, or would they ring GLOW directly? How does that kind of work?
They wouldn't ring 000, no, because that is that's an emergency number. I mean, obviously, if they're being robbed, right, yeah, that's a different matter because it's happening at the time.
Okay.
But just a theft, probably just going to their local police station, I think, Gabby?
Yeah, or call the police station. But I'm actually received a couple of calls from guys who have been assaulted in sex on premises venues, one today and one a couple of days ago.
Oh.
So they reported it to a police officer. They asked for a GLOW. That's how I became involved. But they were treated with the utmost respect. They've reported the crime. They've nominated witnesses. So yes, you can report it to the police. If you feel uncomfortable doing so, well, then you definitely can contact a GLOW. That's what our role is, and then we would get you in, put you in contact with a police officer where it can be reported and investigated appropriately.
What about outing? So say a person is at a beat side and they're needing assistance from GLOW, are they necessarily going to be outed to family, friends or whatever? Can they maintain their privacy if they do report an incident to you?
Absolutely. We've been to court recently with a serial offender who stole items from men at beats, and we were able to suppress the victim's details. So if that's a concern, we can't guarantee that will happen, but we will do everything we can to suppress details so your name and identity is not revealed.
Because that is so important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because there is a fear, and I guess there have been people growing up in the community who are fearful of the police as well, and they're fearful of what's going to happen, and they're already in a stressful situation. I'm going to ask one more question, but we won't answer it until after the song. Now, this is from a male. Can I report something that happened to me 2 years ago? I was bashed by some young guys, and I know who they are. You're listening to Hear Me Roar with the lovely GLOWs. Now, the question came in from a male. Can I report something that happened to me 2 years ago? I was bashed by some young guys and I know who they are.
Yeah, you can report it. There's a couple of things. Firstly, if it's a summary offence, and a summary offence is something like just maybe a bit of a slap or something like that doesn't cause too much damage. That's a summary offence. And the person must be charged within 1 year of the offence for that one. But the next one is an indictable offence. An indictable offence is if they get severe bruising, broken nose, broken bones, that sort of thing. There's no statute of limitations on that. But it's important that the offence can be proved. And if he knows who it is and perhaps has witnesses, yes, the person can be charged.
What about photographic evidence and that sort of thing? Someone has taken a photo of this person. Can that be used?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything like that. Witnesses, photographic evidence, anything like that can be used. But just the stipulation with the timing, the different types of offences.
Okay.
What about something like this? We've got another SMS in who says, I had the word faggot painted across my front fence. I think I know who did it. Can I file charges?
Well, yes. What you can do is report it to the police for them to investigate. Doing that is an offence called criminal damage. So the police would have to investigate that, try and prove who the offender was, and if they have enough evidence to prove who committed the offence, then they would be charged and taken to court.
How could they do that? I mean, if someone's, you know, come in the dead of night with a spray can, you know, written it across, is how would the police go about investigating something like that? Without, I mean, where would it fit on your priority levels?
It's something that we'd be looking for. Witnesses, once again, maybe the dead of night, but someone may have seen it. And it also could be something that's happening around the neighbourhood. It could be sprayed elsewhere.
Right.
So we could get someone dedicated to looking for that particular offender. And also people have different tags, you know, with graffiti. It may not necessarily be, you know, prejudice crime. It could just be someone spraying this around the areas. So, yeah, we'd investigate it.
I'm getting the theme that really we should talk to our neighbours, talk to our friends and report.
Yeah, really important. And also your neighbours are another set of eyes for you as well. So, I mean, I've got a fabulous Greek neighbour who lives over the road from me and her lounge room looks in at my house. So she's my
security. Hello. Has neighbourhood watch right
there. She's stalking you, Jill.
Taking it a little bit far.
Well, she's got good drapes. Jill,
she makes me cakes and all sorts of things, but she's just beautiful. But, yeah, she looks after me.
Well, we're at 225 at Burke Street. We have got... Well, I just really want to get through them. Here's another one. My girlfriend and I recently moved into a new house. We met most of the neighbours and are out. In the last few weeks, our cars have been egged 3 times. Is there anything we can do?
Yeah, well, like you were just saying, it's important to talk about things, to talk to your neighbours, almost like having a neighbourhood watch thing going in your own street. If she knows her neighbours and she gets on well with them, we would talk to the neighbours, we would advise her to talk to them, we would try and determine whether it was a one-off thing, whether other people were getting egged as well, because it might not be prejudice motivated, it might be something, some kids in the street just having fun. We would try to determine if it was a one-off or a recurring event, and we would also ask, like Jill just said, you know, more eyes. We could catch people, you know, if people are aware of what's going on, more people are looking out and protecting each other and helping each other, it's more likely we would catch someone in the act.
Through discussion, I know a lot of people talk about putting a video in their front window or somewhere like that. Is that a legal thing to do, to actually video from your, say, lounge room?
Yeah, look, it's not illegal. It depends how it's going to be used. That's the only thing. But what I suggest with people coming from looking at my crime prevention background is install sensor lights, because no one likes to do anything when the light's on. So if someone's sort of going in your front yard or doing anything like that, everyone's laughing here about having the lights off.
Thank you.
Depends like, what, girl.
No, it does depend, doesn't it? But, yeah, sensor lights are a really, really good thing and they will stop people.
Okay. Look, there's a final question we're going to read out tonight, which is probably one of the more important ones, because I think this is the type of abuse that a lot of people are worried about and probably see a lot more of. My neighbour yells poofta sometimes, but no one other than me hears it. Do I have rights to make him stop? And that would probably go, relate to people being called, you know, dyke or, you know, faggot or all types of homophobic related abuse in the street too.
I think when you look at something like this, that the actual offence, if someone yells that out, it's actually not an offence. But if it's something that's obviously upset that person, there are other ways that it can be dealt with. And it's usually through dispute resolution, neighbourhood centres. We're actually looking at alternative ways of resolving disputes at the moment. I'm actually reviewing a file at the moment on that. So we're moving into that sort of area a lot more with neighbourhood disputes and getting people to actually come to mediation and work things out together. That often resolves things much better.
Because that would be the same case if someone said a racially motivated comment as well, wouldn't it, if they called someone of different or ethnic origin.
Yeah, it is, but that's also something that could be taken to both of these actually could go to Equal Opportunities Commission. But usually if it's just heard by one person, it's said by one and heard by another, it's a bit difficult.
But also if that type of language causes you to fear for your safety and think that you're going to be assaulted, then that is an offence, because that is actually an assault, classified as an assault.
Okay.
So if you knew who the person was and police were there and could identify them, then it could be investigated and they could be charged with it. It's an unlawful assault, so it's a summary offence. It's one of the lower scale offences, but it still is an offence.
This is so interesting and important that we're talking about it. And again, the message is to report.
Absolutely. Everything that happens to you, we need you to report it, because unless you report it, we don't know what's going on. We can't put more resources in particular areas. We need to know.
So tonight in the studio we have Inspector Jill Wood from Safer Communities and Senior Constable Gabrielle Tyack from Gay and Lesbian Liaison. Thank you so much. I could listen to you both all night.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.